Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Hello, and welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's episode, I'm chatting to director Chelsea Stardust about her debut feature, the psychological thriller, All That We Destroy. And on top of that, I'm talking to her about her second feature, the horror comedy, Satanic Panic, both of which received their premiere in May, with the former debuting on Hulu as part of Blumhouse's Into the Dark series right at the start of the month, while the latter premiered at the Overlook Film Festival right at the end of it. Given the overlap, we talk about how Chelsea managed to juggle both projects, as well as discussing the development of both pictures. We also discuss Chelsea's filmmaking background and how she broke into directing after many years working as the assistant to Blumhouse head honcho Jason Blum. However, before we get to the interview, I just want to quickly remind you, listener, the best way you can support New Horror Express is by rate, reviewing, and subscribing to us on iTunes and Stitcher. But now, on to the interview with Chelsea. Hi, Chelsea. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
That's no problem. It's good to have you on the show. So we're going to talk about a bunch of things, but predominantly we'll talk about your two features that will be coming out this year, That We Destroy, which is coming out very soon, and Satanic Panic. So we may as well start, because it comes out earlier, with That We Destroy, which is part of the Hulu Into the Dark series. It's the eighth entry into that. Holiday-themed horrors. Yours is Mother's Day. Tell us a little bit more about the film and how you came to be the director on the project.
Yeah, so the writers of All That We Destroy, which is Sean Keller and James Agnew, had me in mind for the script from the beginning. So they had me in mind to direct it from the start. And I knew them and they had pitched it to me and I loved the idea. And so it was, and I am not a writer, but I love working with writers. And so when they pitched the idea to me, I said, I would love to be attached to direct that. And it was great because I could be a part of the script development phase and read the drafts and give my notes. And so once the script was finished, like, I felt really good about it, as opposed to when you're a director for hire and you get sent a script, then you're not there from the very beginning. You have to kind of give your notes on what's already existing, as opposed to being there from the start. So that was really great. And then, I have a really good friend at Blumhouse, Ryan Turek, and obviously I had worked at Blumhouse for 4 years prior to taking off and directing myself. I was Jason Blum's executive assistant from about 2011 to right when, so basically I started when Insidious was about to come out, right. And then I left right as like Whiplash was going to the Oscars. So I was there for like the rise of the empire, basically. And right as I was leaving, my friend Ryan started working there. And of course, Blumhouse said they, you know, wanted to find a project to work with me on. And so I was sending Ryan like lots of scripts to look at that I was attached to. And, you know, they're very particular about what they sign on to do. And I got a lot of passes on everything. And then finally I pitched him All That We Destroy, and he loved it. And he said, that's what we should do. Like, this should be the one. So, and then he got the rest of Blumhouse on board, and then the TV department got a hold of it, and they said this would be so perfect for the Into the Dark series because it is Mother's Day. It's essentially like, because it is about the core of the story is what a mother will do for her son. So I was very much inspired by like Poltergeist and The Exorcist and Cujo, like the lengths a parent will go for their child. And I don't have any children, but I found that story to be really interesting. And I love those movies. And I also love there's a science fiction element to the movie as well. And it's sort of my homage to like Black Mirror and Ex Machina. And so basically like they gave the green light and we got to shoot it, and we shot it in January of 2017. Is that right? No, 2018. Sorry. January of 2018, last year. And it was a really quick shoot, and you know, we only had, I think, 15 days to shoot it. And, but I'm so happy with the movie, and I'm so excited for the world to see it.
Wow.
Cannot wait. Yeah. So, that's just a really quick sort of recap about how it came about. But, I'm very, excited about it.
I could tell. It sounds exciting. And that was actually going to be, I was going to ask about that as well. You bringing up Black Mirror and Ex Machina, because I, you know, having seen the trailer, you know, I could see there was a clear science fiction thing going on there as well, because, you know, the plot I've seen is, you know, a geneticist that makes clones for her serial killer son. Very interesting plot concept. I'm very intrigued by that.
Yeah, I was really drawn to that. Yeah, because you're exactly right. It's the story of this famous geneticist who walks in on her son murdering a girl. And in order to protect her reputation and keep her son from going to jail, she decides to clone the girl over and over again almost as a form of therapy for him. So it's a very, and it takes place in like 5 years in the future, so not too far. So I also read recently that I think a heart was recently cloned, like someone was able to clone, like this. So this is like very close, close in the future scientific like technology that's being developed, and I feel like there is a world where we will be able to do this, like very, you know, not too far in the future. But I just really wanted to explore that. And yes, it is like, it's totally an homage to Black Mirror. Also, there's some like Westworld in there as well, so yeah.
how difficult was it to fit into that schedule? I mean, like for a feature film, 15 days is pretty quick turnaround. So how was that, you know, and did you have to do a lot of things in one take, or, you know, in terms of
thing
for those days?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, it's funny. I have friends that have done movies in 5 days. I have friends that have done them in 11 days. So I was really excited to get 15. I was like, oh, good, 15 days. And luckily we had 5 day weeks, because 6 day weeks are pretty brutal on your crew when you only get 1 day to sort of relax and regroup. But it's basically was all in the prep. So I made a point to meet with my actors and ahead of time, and we broke down the script and talked through every scene and every sentence, everything. So they knew before they even got on set exactly what I wanted and what my expectations were out of each character. So then when we get to set, it's only making small adjustments here and there. And like, we rarely have time for more than like 3 or 4 takes. So the actors were just, I was very lucky because they were so talented and so dialed into everything that they gave me the performance immediately. Obviously, I'm working with veteran actors like Samantha Mathis and Frank Whaley, and then newcomers. Newcomers in quotes, they've been in a lot of things, but Aurora Perrineau and Israel Broussard and Dora Madison, all of them I just adore and find them to be so incredibly talented. And So they were like ready to go. Like didn't waste any time on set. They knew exactly what I wanted. We're able to dive right in. And then also the prep with my cinematographer, whose name is Mark Evans, and he works on basically everything I've done. he's been the DP on, and we went to college together. So I've known him like 15 years. And we basically like shot the whole movie using little sort of models that like art students use for figure drawing and stuff. So we use these little models and we built the set, and then we do every single shot of the movie. We pre-viz basically. So it's essentially like shot listing and storyboarding in one. So basically we take pictures with an app on the iPhone that allows you to show the lens you want to use, and it tells you the camera you're using, so you can basically tell exactly what it's going to look like frame by frame, shot by shot. And so we did that, and then we take all that data and put it into like a Google spreadsheet, and then that gets given to the department heads, so they know every day how many shots we have, what those shots are, so then they can properly prepare their departments. And basically then we take that and use that as our Bible, and then we just cross off the shots as we do them until the day's over, basically. And of course, like, you have to adapt and cut some things here and there. You always start out pretty ambitious and then you have to scale it back. But, you know, and also shooting in such a short amount of time, you know, sometimes things get cut or you have to sacrifice something, but we were able to shoot every single scene of the movie, which is a miracle. nothing got cut in the shooting process. Obviously in editorial, it's a little bit different. But during the shooting of the movie, we got to do every single scene. And I like to think our preparation helped us do that. And also there were fun things like, you know, creating the black goo, that you see on the poster and in the movie, that our makeup, hair and makeup department concocted and all that stuff. So yeah, it was incredibly challenging to do it in such a short amount of time, but we managed to pull it off because we were prepared, and like the departments were prepared and the actors were prepared, and everyone was so passionate about the story that it helped us get through it.
So did it all go quite seamlessly, or was there any funny on-set mishaps, you know, black goo going everywhere?
yeah, it actually went pretty well. You know, there's always things that happen here and there. Like we had an issue where a location permit wasn't properly filed, so we got shut down with like 6 hours still left to our day. So then that time we had to make up that time somewhere else. And that's just like producerial mistake that happens occasionally, though it shouldn't. The black goo actually was, I think that was the second day of shooting, and it was in this giant tank, and the no one informed us that the location we were shooting at did not have hot water. So the goo, what it's made of is like cornstarch, water, and like food grade charcoal, because it has to be in the, you know, Aurora has it in her mouth and her nose and on her eyes, so it had to be safe. And we had to fill up the tank because we had to shoot, you know, the lab, we had to block shoot that and get it all in one day. And so by the end of the day is when Aurora had to get in the tub, and it was, I think maybe like, I don't even know if it was 50 degrees. It was so cold. And it had like a suction to it because it was so thick. So we had to like thin it out, and then she had to be physically like pushed under the water, because it was so thick, she couldn't get herself in it. So she had to be pushed down, and then we had to bang on the side when we were ready for a take, because she couldn't hear anyone speaking. So she could feel the vibrations of us hitting on the tank, and then she had to like lift herself out of it, which is like how the clones are birthed. Yeah. So that, and then of course, then to get clean, you have to take a shower in cold water because the facility had no hot water. So that was really, she is a, I'm in forever to her debt for for that, because she was willing to do that. And also I will say, like, there's, you know, in the trailer, you see some of the death scenes, those are always really tough to shoot because they're just pretty emotionally where the actors have to go to do that is always pretty intense. And knowing, you know, emotionally what they had to pull from to get there, you know, and you're putting your actor through that over and over again. So those were tough shoots, but Israel and Aurora worked so well together and they genuinely like cared about one another. So like after each scene, they would kind of like check in with each other to make sure they were emotionally okay. But overall it was like a pretty, you know, we had good weather for the most part. Cause in January in LA, sometimes it'll rain, not snow. You know, you can get sometimes risky weather and obviously we have some stuff outside. But overall we were pretty lucky, I think, with the shoot and, you know, obviously got every scene shot. So that's important.
In terms of, getting the cast together, obviously you were kind of at ground zero of the project with the writers. Did you guys have any actors in mind for the roles, and how did the kind of actors come onto the project? Because it seems like you obviously got some pretty established actors. I mean, Frank Whaley's been in loads of things. Samantha Mace has been in the likes of American Psycho. Even Israel's, people know him from Happy Death Day.
Yeah. So basically our casting directors, John McAlary and Matthew Nelson, you know, I talked through the casting with them and so everyone auditioned with the exception of Samantha and Frank because they're so established. And the minute I saw, you know, Aurora and Israel and Dora, I wanted them. And I knew from like our casting lists as well. And I was familiar with Israel because of Happy Death Day. And I had actually reached out to the director of Happy Death Day, Chris Landon, to, you know, sort of vet Israel and be like, okay, what's he like? Cause I love him. Cause I very much wanted this character to be, I didn't want him to come off, creepy just when you immediately see him. I wanted him to be likable and then carry this like crazy darkness with him. And Aurora, I fell in love with immediately. And Dora, I was a huge fan of Friday Night Lights. And it's funny, like both Samantha and Frank, I had been huge, huge fans of. So Samantha, obviously, Pump Up the Volume, American Psycho, Little Women. And Frank, I really wanted him for the role of Parker. And we reached out to him. And then Jason Blum happens to be friends with him. So I asked him, I was like, will you email Frank and put in a good word for me? Because I really wanted, I know a lot of people know Frank from Pulp Fiction and Ray Donovan and Swimming with Sharks. And I know him from Field of Dreams. And so that's a movie that I love that he was in many years ago. And so I bonded with him about Field of Dreams. Like I only had one day of shooting with him. It was the last day, him and Samantha together. And they hadn't really seen each other in quite a few years. And it was sort of like they're both in Broken Arrow. So it was like a little Broken Arrow reunion. But I got to listen to them sort of reminisce about their past and knowing each other, because when they were mic'd, they kept the mics on between takes and I would hear them sort of telling stories and talking and on my headphones. And that was awesome. And working with them, I was very lucky because all the actors are just incredible. And working with Samantha was such a dream. And Frank, it's always cool when you're a fan of an actor and then you get to direct them and work with them. And that's always a treat. And, you know, one of the best things about this biz when that happens.
And you don't find that at all inhibiting, you know, because there is that thing of like, you can be a fan of somebody and it can make you that extra bit nervous. It can, you know, you back off a little bit, but you can be enough to be the director and also be a fan.
Yeah, I played it really cool. I just tried to be, I tried not to gush until after the movie was done. I just tried to be as like professional as possible. And yeah, of course I would get nervous, but it was something where they were so excited about the project and about working with me that it's sort of like their passion for it made me kind of relax a little bit and not be, you know, too nervous. And I also was so prepared in terms of like, I knew the script so well and I was able to answer any question they had. So there wasn't a moment where I didn't feel prepared. So then I would be nervous about anything they would ask me. Like I was ready. And I also had the writers there for any like additional questions. But I think that helped. I think they saw how prepared I was. And so they trusted me, you know.
Was it at all weird that the production is a Blumhouse production and you're directing a film that's by your ex-employers? Was that weird at all for you, or was that just all fine?
You know, it's very difficult, I think, for someone who comes from an assistant background, because I had been an assistant up until I was able to direct myself. So I was an assistant for about 8 years here in LA. And I think it's very difficult for your past employers to see you as anything else but an assistant. Like it's so, so hard to break out of that. And I was able to do it. And basically I think Jason was so supportive. He knew from the beginning when I started working there that I wanted to direct. So he already knew that in his mind that that's what I wanted to do. And I feel so lucky that they took a chance on me and believed in me and trusted me to do this movie, because not a lot of assistants get that chance and it can be very difficult. So I feel very lucky, and I wish that more companies would sort of help their, you know, assistants and employees like be able to make that next step, because it's easier said than done. So I feel very lucky.
And you feel that Blumhouse very much supported you in that endeavor?
Yeah, absolutely. And they helped. They even helped me get the Satanic Panic directing job too. So they let the producers see my first movie. When they called and said, who should we have direct this? They recommended me, which obviously means a lot to me. So yeah, their support is incredibly important to me. And I'm thankful I have it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I mean, obviously I want the interview to be about yourself and your movies. I do feel that I might be somewhat remiss if I didn't ask about your thoughts on like the comments that Jason Blum made. And obviously you've been very supported, and you know, the interview they had about female directors and what your thoughts on that were.
Yeah. So it's funny. I was in the middle of directing Satanic Panic when that happened, when he, you know, had that interview, when that interview came out. And I remember seeing, after we had wrapped, my Twitter feed had blown up. I was like, what is going on? And then I saw the article and I was like, oh no. Like I read it and I said, oh my gosh. And it's tough, because reading the article, and obviously it's different for me because I know Jason and I, you know, was his assistant for 4 years. And it's funny, like when I started at Blumhouse, there was maybe, one, other male that worked there. It was all women. Like basically the whole company was run by women, and Jason, like they were, you know, helping him with the company. And so it was, when I read that, I was like, yes, he definitely misspoke. And it is true, because it's tough, because yes, they helped me. I would not be where I am without Blumhouse. And obviously in the Into the Dark series, they have some female directors besides myself. But I will say they have yet to theatrically release a movie directed by a woman. And that's a big deal. So And they had worked with women before. Karen Moncrief did The Keeping Hours. Catherine Hardwicke did Plush. But those were direct to VOD or DVD. So nothing has been theatrical. And that is sort of what needs to happen. And the other tough thing is, like, I know when that article came out, I know there were things on the horizon, because obviously I'm very close to a lot of employees there. I know what's in development. I know what directors they're talking to. And it sucks, because I know some of the women that they're like about to be making movies with, but that the public can't know yet, because like deals aren't done, or, you know, this and that. And I know people get nervous about letting news out before it's official in a signature capacity. So it's tough, because I was like, I know there's like a couple huge projects on the horizon for them with female directors, but they obviously can't talk about them yet. And obviously The Craft is one of them, which has been announced now. But I think the funny thing is, like, he got called out, but there are so many other companies and horror companies that have had zero female writers, zero female directors for any of their projects. So it's like, because Blumhouse is the on the forefront and the one, you know, who we always hear about, that's been who's in the spotlight, but they're not, you know, they're actually doing more than some of these other companies are. And I've been vocal with those companies about hiring women in a filmmaking capacity. So it's tough, but of course, like he, after the article came out, he was at the premiere for Halloween the same day, and someone on the red carpet from Variety asked him about his comments. And of course he apologized. And then he immediately called out me, saying, my assistant, Chelsea Stardust, she just made her first movie with us. It's coming out on Hulu, like, you know, trying to explain that, but just no one knew that yet. It hadn't been announced. So it's like, if people don't know, you know, that's of course what they're going to say. So he announced it. Obviously I made a statement on my Facebook and on Twitter about it. Because without them, I wouldn't be where I am. But at the same time, it's like, everyone can do better. Everyone, you know, can be hiring women and LGBTQ and people of color. Like, that just needs to be happening. And I think because we're talking about it more, that dialogue is going to help. So I'm really excited to see what 2019, 2020, like, brings to the horror genre in that capacity.
And it does seem that even though for the longest time that a lot of women and, like you say, people of color and LGBTQ people have not had the opportunities, so there's some more opportunities coming up now, and there is some pretty high profile female horror directors out there now, like Jennifer Kent and Julia Ducker now and Claudia Fargeet and Anna Lily Amapour, and all these kind of people are coming through and showing that they can make great horror regardless of gender.
Yes, absolutely. Because it's like, of course the dream is to always be chosen because you're a great director, but right now it's like people are trying to better themselves with diversity, so I will happily be hired because I am a woman, but also it's like, I hope I'm being hired because of my directing skill. So it's like, it's getting to that. That's where we need to get to. And instead of having like 1 month about women in horror, that every month is about women in horror. So I think we'll get there eventually.
Well, hopefully. I hope so. I'd like to see an equal landscape for everybody in horror. You know, we're all horror fans, and you know, everybody who's who wants to make horror, you know, should be given that chance. When did you decide to make that jump from, like, you were an assistant for 8 years, then you jumped and you made some shorts. You got into directing career. You made some shorts with Crook TV. How did that process happen?
Yeah. So, I was assisting, you know, for 8 years, and it was I started out in comedy with Ivan Reitman and at his company. And then I was assisting Judd Apatow at his, and then I finally got to Jason cause all I wanted to do was horror, and I got stuck in comedy. And then I just got to a point, I told Jason, I was like, I will be your assistant until I'm ready to make the leap and direct myself. I just feel like wasn't quite ready to. I wanted to be on set. I hadn't been on a film set from start to finish yet. And I had made films in college, but that wasn't really the same. And I just wanted to learn as much as I possibly could. So I shadowed a bunch of directors in commercials and in television and in features. And I shadowed Adam Robitel on Insidious, The Last Key. And right after I did that, I was like, okay, now I'm ready. Like, Adam had me so involved in the process, like by his side the whole time, so I could watch him work with cast and his cinematographer and, you know, editorial. Like, it was so helpful. And to see, you know, to be on a college set versus a Hollywood set is very different. So getting to be a part of that, I was like, okay, now I'm ready. And when I left Blumhouse, Jason hooked me up with Crypt TV, and you know, I brought some scripts to them and they gave some scripts to me to direct. And before I knew it, I had like 6 short films under my belt, and then was just, you know, chasing the feature, like just trying to get a feature made. And it took, you know, basically 11 years of being in LA to finally make that happen. But I think it was just, you know, paying my dues and meeting the right people. And then everything just finally aligned. And honestly, it's like, I know Blumhouse wanted to make All That We Destroy because it was me, but I also know that the script is what they were also so passionate about. They loved it and they said, this is so different. And it's ultimately the writing that I feel like writers never get enough credit, but the writing is what essentially got me that job. So because I brought them a great script.
Was it a big leap at all? And I've talked to a few people now, they're doing their debut feature. Some have found the jump from shorts to feature quite smooth, some not so much. How was it for you?
I think it was pretty smooth. I, you know, surrounded myself with a crew of people I knew and had worked with and I felt comfortable with. And because everyone ultimately trusted me and my vision, it made it pretty seamless. Also, I don't think I had shot a short film that was more than like 2 or 3 days. Like all the short films, most of the ones I had done were one day shoots with the exception of like one other short film. But so to have more than one day to shoot something was awesome. It's like, oh, this is great. 15 days. But I think it was pretty seamless transition for myself.
The other thing I was going to ask was, you've certainly had a varied career. You also directed some musical theater with a musical called Slash the Musical, where you, I believe that you worked with Sean Keller there as well. And you worked with him on one of your shorts. So it's a working relationship there.
Yes. So Slashed was, really fun. It was my first time directing theater, let alone musical theater. It was for the Hollywood Fringe Festival. And it was just sort of something fun we wanted to do. I always like being creative in all different capacities. Obviously I've directed a radio play too. And so I just wanted to do something different, and it was very difficult, I will say. My actors were incredible. And it's so fun to do something that's like a love letter to Friday the 13th and Wet Hot American Summer, which are two movies I love. And also Sean Cunningham, who did Friday the 13th, came to the show and loved it. And of course, that's like the ultimate validation. But it was a challenge because in features, I feel like as a director, you have all the control, whereas in theater, your actors have the control. So I noticed that basically there's no take two. Like when you go out each night, when those actors go out, it's the play is in their hands. So you have to sort of relinquish that control and just trust them, just like actors have to trust you on film. So that was something I had to had to get used to. Sean Keller and I collaborate on short films and on Slashed the Musical. Obviously he wrote All That We Destroy, and I'm attached to another project, and his writing partner is James Agnew, so I'm attached to another project of theirs, he's also my significant other and the love of my life.
Okay. I didn't know that part. Fair enough.
Yeah. That's another. So being able to work with someone in that capacity, some people can do it and some people can't. And we're very lucky that we're able to have sort of a writer-director relationship as well, which is great.
You would assume that might be, like, you know, it certainly could be very hard in a relationship to work that closely together and to remain, to separate the two.
Yeah, but we were able to do it pretty well, so I'm very thankful for that.
This might be a bit of a silly question, but on the musical, I'm kind of intrigued. I watched a lot of films, and I've talked to a few directors. I have a good idea of what a director does in a film, but in theater, I'm not sure what the role is really.
I would say it was very similar to a film experience, but the structure of it is so different, and it's talking about, and obviously it was for Fringe. So Fringe is like bare bones production. And luckily I had producers helping me, but it's like, okay, getting, you know, this is for the kind of theater we were doing. It's like, all right, getting the scenes blocked out. We hired a choreographer, which is Rebecca McKendry, who's a director, and she does the podcast Shockwaves. And so she happens to have a dance background. So she did the choreography for us. And it's a lot of, it was sort of letting the actors play as much as possible. Like I wanted them to really have a good time with it. But honestly, like the scariest thing for me was like relinquishing control. Cause the minute I realized, I'm like, I don't really like, I'm directing them, but at the end of the day, like when they get on stage, they could do whatever they want. Like, like there's nothing I can do if they decide to change a line or drop a line or whatever. Like I can't, you know, call cut or, you know, and do the scene again. You just have to let it go. So it was a very interesting exercise in honestly trusting your actors. Like I trust my actors on film. And for some reason I was so hesitant to do that in theater that I finally, it like taught me a very good lesson in that. And I was like, and of course they crushed it every night. So my anxiety about that comes from me. And also all the actors had done a lot of theater before. So I think that made my job easy because they were very experienced, and that helped me. And ultimately like the goal was for them. I just said, I want to have a really fun time with this. Mm. And I was very stressed out during it because it was so foreign to me. Like that kind of, to know you didn't have a take two, to know that this was it. It was a bit of a struggle, but we are talking, but at the end of the day, we had an amazing run. We added two more shows because it was so popular. We sold out every night. And we are talking about bringing it back again to the stage and expanding it. Cause the show I think was only like 40 minutes. And we're talking about expanding it and bringing the cast back and doing instead of a fringe festival, doing a real run at a theater. So that may be something, I don't know if that'll happen in this year, but maybe it'll be for 2020. We'll see if Slash the Musical makes a appearance, has a return.
One more question on that. I was thinking, and obviously it's a musical that it pays homage to slasher films. So I presume that there's kind of like jump scares in it, which must be very difficult to achieve on stage. When, you know, camera kind of, you know, you can lead the audience with a camera on a film, but you can't do that on stage.
Yes, absolutely. So there's actually a lot more we wanted to do, but there, because of the theater we were at, there are limitations. And the way Fringe Festival works is you have 15 minutes to load in your show, and then you have 15 minutes to take down your show. So in terms of, you have to think about your sets, your props, all that stuff, because you literally only have 15 minutes to set up and tear down, which is insane. But that's because there's a show before you and a show after you. So we used a lot of lighting effects. We had an amazing lighting technician who we basically used strobe lights, and we had to basically send the audience's eye by using those techniques. Like, okay, very similar to what you do in film with a camera. Like, okay, so how do we block this out? Or who do we put an actor in the audience to have a scare there? It's like, we had to get really creative about it. And also I wanted, you know, we had blood gags, and then the theater wouldn't let us have any blood anywhere. So we're like, okay, so if we don't get that, what do we use? How do we get creative? So it's like, you know, we got have fake body parts that we could throw out in the audience, and and we had red yarn and red ribbons and all this stuff that we would use, ripped up pieces of red cloth that would get tossed out in the audience and would you know, once in a while be a jump scare. But it was, we had to get really creative with that, with the lighting. Yeah. It's very, cause it's like, okay, how do we, you know, some musicals like Evil Dead has a splatter zone. So you cover everybody in blood and things like that, but we didn't have that. So it's like, okay, we really had to think outside the box, and it totally worked. We got very lucky. So all of our creativity paid off.
That's excellent. Yeah, I've seen a few of those types of musical. There's some of them I've kind of come across here for the Edinburgh Fringe and
yes,
the Animator, the musical, and a few of the other ones. If Slash ever make it over, I'd definitely go and see it.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, let's talk a bit about your other film that's coming out this year. Do we know when it's coming out this year at the moment, or is that yet to be revealed? I know some images have been revealed from the film Satanic Panic recently, but not much else.
I do, but I'm not allowed to say. Yeah, so I can't give any, there'll be, what month is this, the end, April? There'll be more in the next couple days/weeks revealed about what's to come for the movie. Yeah, unfortunately, I can't say quite yet.
Well, that's a shame. Anyway, tell us a little bit about the movie, whatever you can tell us about the plot of the movie, and how you came on board to that picture.
So Satanic Panic was a little bit of a different process than All That We Destroy. So in December of 2017, a friend of mine sent me a script, and she said, hey, I just read this. I feel like you would totally dig this. It's right up your alley. And it was Satanic Panic. And I read it and I said, this movie is batshit crazy. I cannot wait to see it come out on the big screen. And then cut to a couple months later. So I think, let's see, I shot All That We Destroy in January, and then come like June 2018, my agent reached out to me and she said, hey, can you read this script right away? They're looking for a female director and your name came up. And I said, oh, sure. And I looked and it was Satanic Panic. I was like, I've read this script. It's great. But what attracted me so much about the script was that it's written by Grady Hendrix, and Grady Hendrix and Ted Gagan came up with a story together. And I'm a big fan of Ted's films, and Grady, I'm a huge fan of his novels. So Paperbacks from Hell, Horror Store. I love My Best Friend's Exorcism. We Sold Our Souls just came out. So I was such a fan of him that I was like, I want to be a part of this. And then also seeing that Fangoria was attached, which is a huge deal because they're back now. And the Cinestate, because I was a big fan of Craig Zahler's movies, Bone Tomahawk and Brawl in Cell Block 99. And so I basically said, I want to work with all of these people. I really want this movie. I had already read the script. I said, what do I have to do? So I basically wrote, I got on the phone and pitched myself. And then I wrote an email explaining, you know, why I'm the best person for the job, my inspirations, how I want it to look, how I want it to sound, all that stuff. And then a couple weeks went by and I was like, oh, I guess somebody else got the job. Because of course it's like, it was sent to me and then multiple other women. They really wanted a female director because the script is so female centered. And so then I just really pitched the shit out of it and, you know, kept having people put in a good word for me here and there. And obviously Blumhouse helped a lot. And the producers saw my first movie and then they said, yes, we'd love to have you direct this movie. And then I was off to, so I was in pre-production in September. That's when I was also casting and preparing. And so then I went to Texas. We shot it in Dallas for all of October and the beginning of November. And that was an 18-day shoot. So only a couple more days than the first movie. And it was incredibly challenging. And because the script, like when you see the movie, there's a lot. The script is, there's a lot going on. So it was a lot to tackle. But we did it, and I'm and it's a horror comedy, so it's very different than All That We Destroy, which is I would describe as a science fiction thriller. And horror comedy is really tricky, but I was sort of pulling from like Drag Me to Hell and Evil Dead, both the original and the remake, and Jennifer's Body. And there were a lot of inspirations in the horror comedy world. And ultimately, like I read the script, and it was a story of this pizza girl who's just trying to like get her life back on track, and pizza delivery girl trying to get her life back on track, and basically delivers a pizza to the wrong place at the wrong time and is just trying to get her tip, and chaos ensues without giving too much away. But what also attracted me is almost the entire script is women, and it's also a satanic cult coven run by women, and the men take such a backseat in the story. They are important, but they are not front and center like all the women are. And it's just all the characters carried so much power, and I was so drawn to that. And it's also a commentary on classism in America, and so, you know, all of those things I was really attracted to in the script. And I got to work with Grady, and sort of I had a couple notes going into it, so and he was so receptive to them and said yes to everything, and I got to talk through it all with him, because I wasn't sure, like, you know, as a director for hire, I didn't know how much the writer wanted to be involved or could be involved in ideas for rewrites. And he was about to go on a book tour for We Sold Our Souls, and he was so lovely and wonderful to work with. And I was a huge fan of his too, so I was like very giddy about getting to work with him on it. But and then we made it, and I'm so excited for the world to see that movie as well. It was a crazy year. 2018 was a crazy year of shooting movies kind of back to back.
Yeah, I mean, like, how much in terms of scheduling, was there any crossover between Satanic Panic and All That We Destroy?
So the tricky thing was, because All That We Destroy was part of Into the Dark, and they knew it was going to be Mother's Day from the start, I had picture locked that movie fairly late. And then they kind of put post-production on hold because it wasn't coming out till May, like, you know, months and months later, because they have one coming out every month. They're like, well, we have to get all these ones done because they come out first. So when I shot Satanic Panic, no scheduling issues, no problems. But then after I wrapped Satanic Panic, all of a sudden I'm in editorial for Satanic Panic. And then All That We Destroy, like, we hadn't done sound design, score, color correction, VFX, and on All That We Destroy, none of that had been done yet. So all of a sudden there was like, oh shit, the movie comes out in, you know, 4 months, 3 months, we have to get going on this stuff. And so then it got to a point, editorial for Satanic Panic was pretty much fine. But then when it got into, I was basically splitting my time between sound mixing, color correcting, VFXing both movies at the same time. So that was really difficult. So I had to split up my days basically almost in half. So I'd be doing stuff on Satanic Panic from like 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. and then doing sound mix on All That We Destroy from 7 p.m. until like 11 p.m. or midnight. So it was really challenging. And of course my weekends, I'd be trying to work on the whatever movie I could and watching cuts. And luckily both Blumhouse and Fangoria were like very chill and understanding of that, because there's nothing anyone could really do about it. It's just how the scheduling worked out. And it was really hard because you want to be giving one movie all your attention when you have to split your attention between two movies. I had to enlist the writers of All That We Destroyed. You know, they had to oversee, you know, one session of sound design for me because I couldn't be there. I was like, I have to be on Satanic Panic, like, just because this got scheduled first. So, and then I'd have to, you know, go in and give my notes. And, you know, luckily everyone was very flexible, but I do not recommend that for anyone to go through, because, and then they both finish at the same time. So, and then they're both done. So, It was, and of course, because they're totally different subgenres of horror, the vibe is different. So the score, the music is different. So corresponding with one composer versus corresponding with the other composer about what the movies need to sound like and giving notes on that, you know, trying to make your brain do two things at once, basically. I'm despite that, I'm so happy and proud of how the movies came out, because sometimes that doesn't work out.
That's really good. I was thinking as well, it must be kind of difficult to kind of switch modes in terms of the headspace of those two different movies that obviously have, it seems, very, very different tones and feels to them.
Like it was very different, because obviously Destroy has more of a moodiness to it, and Satanic Panic, it's like we're balancing laughs and gore gags and scares and all that stuff. And also the mood that's created by the score, like Umberto scored All That We Destroy, and you know, that those scores are very much inspired by who will I use as an example, like the Alien score, right, or Denis Villeneuve's movies, like the scores for his movies are a big influence. And whereas Satanic Panic, Wolfman of Mars did that score, and it's a combination of like 70s goblin style giallo rock mixed with John Carpenter synth. So a totally different
very, very different mode.
Yeah. And so and honestly, what I would do is I would listen to whatever. So if I was going to work on Destroy, I would listen to that composer's work. Or if I was going to work on Satanic Panic, I'd listen to like Wolfman of Mars, like in my car. And that would sort of help my brain sort of rewire into what I was going into next, which was helpful. Like I literally had to listen to something to be like, okay, let's switch over to the next thing. But I did it.
Well, at least you did it and you pulled it off, and it sounds like everything went well. What you said before, horror comedy is like quite a difficult genre to do. And also, so would you say that Satanic Panic is a horror comedy or a comedy horror? I mean by that, like, I would say like a comedy horror is something like Shaun of the Dead, where a horror comedy would be something like Evil Dead 2.
I would say I would compare it maybe more to Shaun of the Dead, where I think comedy plays a role before the horror does. And it's just, I don't know, it's tricky because it's sort of its own kind of genre. It also has like an indie movie feel to it. So, even though it's like, or, you know, the sort of like something like Diary of a Teenage Girl or like Wetlands or something like that. When I mean indie feel, but then, you know, it starts out as one movie and then all of a sudden it takes a turn, which I love. I compare it a lot to The Wizard of Oz, where you start out in one world and then the minute you get to where the satanic cult lives, it takes a turn. So it's like when Dorothy opens the door to the world of color, everything changes. So, but I would say, yeah, I'd say back... comedy with a lot of horrific elements in it. it's got some like intense things in it that I'm really excited, and there's some things in it that American audiences haven't seen, and I know Grady was pulling from a lot of Asian cinema as well, and I'm just really excited to sort of expose American audiences to a lot of cool stuff in Satanic Panic.
I don't know why that description made me think of Society.
Oh, there's a homage to Society in Satanic Panic.
All right, great. Yeah. No, reading the plot description and stuff, and listening to you talk about it being a big like comedy and then it being something very, very different. Like, Society came to mind.
Cool. There's an homage to that in there. So
it sounds great. And you've really assembled, like, I mean, both behind the camera, with yourself and the right, the people who wrote it, you know, Grady and Ted, and the people on camera as well. I mean, you've really assembled a great cast who've most of whom have some history in horror, you know, have been in notable horror films.
Yeah, I was really lucky with the cast of Satanic Panic as well. Our casting director was amazing. And I knew of, I'm trying to think the order we cast everybody in. I knew Ruby Modine from Blumhouse because she is also in Happy Death Day. And Shameless. And so I met with her, loved her. She really wanted the part of Judy, which you'll see when you see the movie. But and then Haley Griffith, our lead actress, it was her first feature film. I saw her audition. I think she had done a couple guest spots on television, but I saw her self-tape because she's in New York and I didn't even get to see her in person. And the minute I saw her audition, I was like, it's her. Like, Sam is her. Like, it's, I don't know how we can, you know, I met with a lot of other people, but I was like, it needs to be, I said, they're never going to let me hire. Like, I didn't think they would. A lot of times production companies don't really let you hire quote unquote unknowns. And sure enough, like Fangoria, you know, Dallas and Amanda, the producers felt the same. They're like, absolutely, this role is her. And I was very lucky that we sort of saw eye to eye on all of that. And yes, we have horror royalty. We have Jordan Ladd and Jeff Daniel Phillips and AJ Bowen and Whitney Moore. Also Clark Wolf is in it. And of course, then we have Arden Mirren, who comes from an amazing comedy background. And she was so fun to work with. And then getting to work with Rebecca and Jerry in the movie was so fun. And Rebecca hadn't done, obviously she's done special effects stuff with X-Men, but she had never done horror before. And so she had never done real like gore gags or anything like that. And she had a lot of fun. And it was really fun working with her. And obviously Jerry was like so chill. And his character, well, I can't say too much about it, but isn't the best guy. So right. He really had a lot of fun with the role, and I had a lot of fun working with him. So very lucky. Like I'm so in love with our cast, and I can't, I'm, it's sort of, you know, it was very interesting getting to, you know, it was a different experience than my first movie. And I didn't have as much time with the actors, in prep as I did with the first movie. It was Satanic Panic was a little tougher. We were shooting in Dallas. So it's like scheduling when people come in and trying to, so I had to do a lot of it remotely, either over email or over the phone, or, I got to have a session with Haley and Ruby together, and Rebecca I got to meet up with once before we started. So I was able to lay the groundwork. But again, like these actors are so good at what they do that it just made my job so much easier. And everyone was so down for the story and how insanely crazy it is. But everyone was just here for it, which was such a big deal and doesn't always, I don't know if that always happens for everybody. So I feel very lucky. And it was a very tough 18-day shoot. We had, you know, the weather was 50 degrees and it was torrential rain and it was so challenging and cold and we had night shoots but everyone just was on board 100%. So, and my crew just worked their ass off and I'm very, very lucky. So it was intense.
What was the kind of toughest challenge on the shoot? It sounds like it did not go as smoothly as the shoot on your first movie.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was just, it was a challenging script to do in 18 days. There was just a lot. Like, I think our first day of shooting, we had like 4 location moves. So, which is really intense. And I just think time wasn't always on our side. And the weather wasn't always on our side. But those are things that like you can't control the weather. So you just have to go with it. And that was probably the most challenging, was just like, there wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough days. But again, like we got everything we needed, like shooting that movie, we were able to get what we needed. And even though I used my same DP and we structured out, we did the same kind of prep for this movie as All That We Destroy, you go through and you really have to, even though we got three more days in the first movie, it just wasn't enough. So we really had to sort of pare down, okay, what's the best way to shoot this on the budget we have and with the time we have? And we had to really get creative about that. And again, luckily the actors, like, you know, brought their A game, and we were able to get, I don't know what it's going to be like to be able to have more than like, to have time to do more than like 4 or 5 takes of something. So I don't know when that day comes, what that's going to be like. But I'm really glad we were able to get everything we were able to. But you know, it's like,
when you get that freedom, that when that day comes, when you get that freedom, are you going to like David Fincher it and like, you know, 104, take 104, go do it.
I know. Like pull a Kubrick. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what'll happen? And also anytime you're dealing with, practical effects, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And, luckily for the most part, like Tate and his team, came up with some amazing practical effects that I'm really excited for everybody to see. And, you know, just, there's a lot of stuff that's out of your control and you just have to go with it and keep steering the ship. But I think I probably had the hardest time with like the weather, because also it was a fluke. Everyone's like, it's not like this. Like, we don't know what's going on. And I was like, maybe it's the satanic powers at working against us. I think they're working for us in the movie. So, but, and also night shoots are hard. And we had 6-day weeks, which are really difficult because there's no real turnaround. And I got sick and, you know, other people got sick. It's just like what happens when you're, you know, in close proximity to one another. And, but we did it. And the movie looks fucking awesome.
Excellent. I very much look forward to checking it out whenever it comes out.
Yes, yes. You will get to see it in 2019. So...
Right. Okay. So are you just currently just in kind of promotion mode for those movies, or have you got a next project lined up? What's next for?
Yeah. Yeah. So, now that both movies are finished, it's like press, it's interviews and podcasts and promoting both movies. And, obviously Destroy comes out next week. So once that's out in the world, it's sort of figuring out what's next for me to direct. I am attached to a project that I can't give too many details on, but that may be, we're sort of talking about casting right now. So that may be the next thing to shoot. I think that would probably happen maybe in the fall of this year. But also to see what my reps have, I'm getting meetings set up, and my reps are also looking for seeing what else is out there for me. To do after this movie I'm attached to. So we're sort of seeing what'll happen. And also I'm taking a bit of a hiatus. So I need some self-care. I need to relax and catch up on my sleep. And and I'm going to do some traveling and see my family and things like that that I haven't gotten to do as much. So, because I've just been in crazy... post-production mode. I haven't stopped working on movies since like, what would it be? October 2017, when I was prepping the first one. So I literally have not stopped since then. So I'm ready to take like a 3-month break, but I'll also be promoting movies. So we'll see. Break in quotations.
Well, it sounds like it's very well deserved. And thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a treat.
That was my guest, Chelsea there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show, as well as yourself, listener, for tuning in to the latest edition of the podcast. Also, if you enjoyed the show and are keen to support us, please do rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. As well as that, you can always give us a like on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. That's all for now, but do be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for more New Horror Express. Until then, though, see ya!